My name is Kieran Ryan, and we're going to be discussing the Protection of Personal Information Act, or as it's better known, the POPI Act. That's just been signed into law, and it aims to safeguard the personal information of individuals and organizations. This is a significant change in the law that has massive implications for organizations, and it follows similar laws that have been passed in other parts of the world, notably in Europe. Armor Berger-Smith is head of data privacy at Worksman's Attorneys and joins us today to discuss the implications of this. Welcome, Armor.
Thank you, Kieran.
Can you start off by giving us some background to the Protection of Personal Information Act? Why was it considered necessary, more than 20 years after the creation of the internet, to start looking at ways to protect personal information? Was it because of the widespread abuse of companies and organizations collecting private information? What was the motive behind that?
Well, I think, you know, the first instinct in the South African society would be that Facebook caused all of this to happen, which is actually not the case at all. Facebook just raised awareness as to data privacy and the protection of personal information in the South African regime. The POPIA legislation was signed and went through Parliament in 2013 already. So we've got a fairly long run to date. However, the legislation has not been fully enacted as yet. The question as to why we in South Africa has joined the European Union and then actually the rest of the world in terms of data protection and the protection of personal information, as to a large extent, it's driven by commerce and the fact that we form part of a global economy and we cannot operate and function as an island on our own in South Africa, especially because out of the European Union, they are at the forefront of the protection of personal information. And we had to put together legislation and robust legislation to join up and align with the rest of the world economy.
Okay, so let's have a look at what do we mean by personal information? How does the POPI Act define that?
Yeah, so this is such a broad concept. And I said that the EU is at the forefront of the protection of personal information. And our legislation, again, follows to a large extent the definition for personal data or personal information as stated in the GDPR and the previous European legislation. And it is not only an individual's name or gender or race. It covers every single element and every single aspect in terms of which an individual can actually be identified. So if I've got information, my views and opinions, and that is used, and in terms of that I can be identified as or more, that constitutes my personal information. And as a data subject, because at the end of the day, every single warm body, every single individual has personal information that belongs to him. And this legislation provides certain rights that the data subject, each individual, can claim for him or herself to say, but I need companies to respect my personal information, to manage it and to process it, a big word in terms of data protection, how we process information. In other words, how we deal with personal information once we receive it. And it actually caters for a very wide and broad range of information, biometric information. Now, the interesting thing is, you know, and I know there's a lot of criticism as to why are we taking so long and why is this piece of legislation not fully enacted? We need it as an economy. And we've seen so many data breaches happen that we as South Africans have been involved in to date as well. Already, we see differences between our legislation, as I said, dating back to 2013, and where the Europeans have moved in terms of the GDPR and their definition of personal information. For instance, they've included genetic information. Now, the world is evolving so fast. If we just, you know, the two of us sitting here can still recall when we received our first Nokia handsets, and it was such a wonderful handset. We thought we were wonderful to have a cell phone in our hands. The reality is our children expect new technology to roll out every few months. The world around us, and also in terms of legislation, is evolving as quickly. And we need to ask ourselves, you know, nowadays, it's not something strange or foreign to actually understand genetic information and the genetic information linking back to a specific individual. the longer we take to fully enact this piece of legislation, are we not falling behind the curve in terms of where the rest of the world might be moving?
I'm just trying to think through this genetic information. You also mentioned your personal views. So if you hold political views or you hold views, particular views on gender, things like that, that is also considered private personal information. It has to be treated within the requirements of this law. It
must be treated in terms of the principles or the conditions for processing of the personal information. And that's going to change a lot of the way in which the business community would be dealing with personal information. I need to remind you, Karen, that the legislation provides for special personal information, political views, religious information, trade union affiliation, and how that class of special personal information can be processed and provides for conditions in how to deal with it, when you can process it. And a bigger thing, and I think as a mother for me as well, if I just put myself in the shoes of a data subject, the information of children and how we will be dealing with that going forward, which introduces the whole concept of consent. You know, when can companies and organizations actually process personal information, and how do we deal with the issue of consent in that regard, and what does consent actually entail? And again, a balancing of rights, the right to privacy guaranteed in our constitution. That's where the fundamental ethos of the protection of personal information legislation lies. We've got the constitution that guarantees to each one of us in South Africa a right to privacy, but we need to balance that.
So let's just make a practical example. You're on Facebook and you put all of your likes, the books that you read, who all your friends are, where you went to dinner last night, all that kind of thing. Now, presumably, if you are on Facebook, you've already consented to have that information in the public domain. I presume then you've abrogated any rights to pretend later that that information is private.
Indeed. Now, that is, if we look at preparing companies from a compliance perspective for the inaction of the PAPIA legislation, one has to consider, where do I actually get the personal information that we've got in a company about an individual, about a Karen? Where did we get the information? And some of that information companies can in fact collate and collect through public statements or social media postings. We see that more and more often. And it's introducing a whole debate in terms of employment and how do we recruit people to join companies. Nowadays, it is not a foreign concept for employers and HR divisions to actually go onto the internet and Google an individual and have a look at their Facebook page. And was that willingly provided? Is it freely available in the public sphere? And then again, you know, even though this is not a ream of paper, the legislation, it's a small little booklet that contains the PAPIA legislation. But in that lies a number of very interesting concepts to interpret in your application within a company. How are you going to interpret and apply data privacy legislation?
All right, you've touched on consent. That is one of the requirements contained in the PAPIA Act. Now, I presume when we talk about consent, that means that I must give consent to have my information used in a particular way, such as whether or not I want to receive direct marketing information from a company. But I'm sure there's more to it than that. Can you just go into a little bit more about how do exactly does a person give consent for his or her personal information to be received and processed?
Now, the consent principle is reflected in detail in Section 11 of the legislation. And over time, I would suggest that somewhat of a misnomer got established in the way we considered and, you know, just in terms of seminars presented and views put forward, that consent is the beginning and the end of everything if you deal with personal information, which is it's a fallacy and it's an absolute misnomer. Because if we consider Section 11, and I'm looking at this specifically from a corporate entity's perspective, a company's perspective. There are various other ways of creating the ability to process or allowing a company the ability to process information other than mere consent. And that brings us to the principle of a balancing of rights and responsibilities. You know, the purpose of the PAPIA legislation is clearly set out in Section 2 of the Act, which states that the PAPIA legislation provides effect to the constitutional right to privacy and safeguards our personal information, but it is subject to justifiable limitations. And I think that is the core principle that we need to interpret and in the business community need to fully understand, because that will enable companies to align their business practices in terms of the POPIA legislation in a very effective manner. Because you do not necessarily, the POPIA legislation does not state under all circumstances must you get consent. You know, years back there was a massive debate as to is this an opt-in or an opt-out, you know, how do we roll this out? I think the principle is very clear in terms of the legislation. I must give willingly, freely my consent and I must understand what I consent to. If we look at the massive Google fine that was imposed a couple of weeks back under the GDPR, again, the criticism...
Sorry, just to pause on that, just explain, that's in Europe.
That's in Europe, Google indeed. Google fined in Europe. It's fined in Europe, indeed. If we look at that and we can draw that principle through looking forward how we will implement the POPIA legislation in South Africa, our Act states, if I obtain consent from a data subject, that data subject must fully understand what information would be collated and what a company will do with that information. And I know I'm being very unkind to summarize it in such a rude and barbaric manner, but that is the crux of it. My data subject must be fully aware. And if we consider Google, their policy and the first concern raised and the complaint, the basis of the complaint, was fundamentally focused on the fact that data subjects did not understand fully and they were not clear in their communication what information they will collate and what they'll be doing with it. So we need to understand each and every single company in a far more detailed manner, what we actually do with information, what information do we pull together in our business processes, in our day-to-day interaction with our customers and suppliers, and what do we do with that? It's been too easy for too long to just ask a lot of information because you've got standard questionnaires and templates that you roll out, and there was no need to sit still and actually critically ask ourselves, what information do we actually require? If you fill in those lists and those registers when you enter office building, what information is in actual fact required for that security company to monitor the security of the individual entering the business premises or a residential estate or, you know, any other place that you might walk into and where you're confronted with, you need to provide and disclose your personal information. What do you actually need and how do you then streamline that process? Because often information is asked far beyond what is needed for the business and the running of the business.
So what about a situation like Google? Let's just stick on that for a minute, where they obviously track your web browser movements and then they tailor advertisements to what is obviously your areas of interest. Is that contained in the POPIA Act? Is that something that would be made more difficult for them to do?
You raise the concept of automated processing, and that then links to profiling and how a company would position themselves to attract more business in terms of what they do with the information they collate. Now, our legislation clearly provides for automated processing, and how do we deal with automated processing? The reality is, you know, we can arguably state that consent is one of the most important requirements for lawful processing in the South African regime, and how do we deal with that? But the reality is we need to voluntarily express consent and not be under any pressure. And we need to understand that we can object to the processing of our personal information to actually clearly state, no, I don't want to accept cookies. You'll often, when people Google, they'll accept cookies, not fully understanding that that actually enables the tracking of their browsing session and enables entities to present them with tailor-made advertising. So automated processing is also covered in terms of our legislation.
Okay, we've got a few questions coming in, but before we start picking up on those, just address this one. And one of the issues addressed by the POPIA Act is information gathered by CCTV cameras.
Indeed.
Now, these are popping up all over the place, usually for security purposes. What does the Poppy Act say about the handling of the CCTV camera footage?
So in the first instance, if we consider CCTV camera footage, such a the gathering of that information is not exempt from the conditions of the POPIA legislation spells out. How do I collect it? Do I, the whole concept, Section 11, consent, or under what basis will I process the information? How I communicate it to my data subject? How long will I keep it? How will I destroy it? And the purpose specificity. So the POPIA legislation in the first instance does not in itself and out of itself prohibit CCTV footage. And that introduces the concept. Yes, as a data subject, I do have the right to privacy, and my image captured on the CCTV footage constitutes personal information.
Interesting.
So, you know, my photo or my image would constitute personal information. That does not necessarily mean that I can object to all the CCTV cameras going up, especially around in our in the Johannesburg area. And if we consider the balancing of rights, the right for the community to be safe and the ability to actually fight potential crime within a society is a justification to allow for CCTV footage. You know, this is not a new concept in terms of the South African legal system and regime. Especially in the United Kingdom, they've got very clear guidelines that their regulator has issued over many years in terms of how do we deal with CCTV footage, the importance of CCTV footage, how do we guard the protection of personal information while at the same time guarding the safety and security of the community and the need for that. So at the end of the day, and it's a theme that flows through this piece of legislation, you need to be reasonable and you need to balance rights.
It sounds like we're going to have quite a few instances of case law having to decide, you know, exactly what are the boundaries of personal information. Let's just jump into some of these questions here. We all have to sign in to places when we visit, and then we provide our personal information, including photographs of our driver's licenses and that sort of thing. What's going to happen to all that data? And why is it not destroyed when we leave that site? Surely Poppy will force the way this visiting practice is enforced. Yeah.
I think that will change going forward significantly. The same applies to all the spam we receive on a daily basis. The POPIA legislation will apply to these practices, and it will force companies to reconsider how they deal with this information. And you as an individual would be entitled to understand for how long will they retain it, why do they collect it, and they need to explain exactly why they need, kinds of information they need. So if we stand back and we unpack this, we know a big, and especially if you consider gated communities and office blocks, and obviously people need to understand which individuals enter the premises, and they need to be able to identify them, and I would suggest they need to be able to contact them if something should go wrong. You need to consider then what is the extent of information I need to identify that individual that have entered the premises, and indeed how long do I keep it for? Is this something visiting a visitor to a residential estate, or is this a client that will be visiting my offices for a number of months over a period of time? As a company, I need to be able to put forward a proper policy and terms and conditions as to how I'll deal with that information and when I will destroy it. But it is not a mere fact. Often I think we think we fill in books when we enter an office building and you wonder, you know, this, the papers are dirty and the book actually looks terrible that you have to write your name in. What on earth will they be doing with it? And who will have my mobile number if I write it down here? These are the aspects that the POPIA legislation will impact on significantly.
Okay, next question is, and this is from Duane, which act would apply if local users' data is stored in the cloud based in the US or Europe? I think that's quite a good question.
Duane, this is a very important question, and especially with this whole concept of cloud computing. So I think the first aspect that we need to remind ourselves of is that there isn't really a cloud. It is a database, a physical database, that's just housed somewhere else or in another jurisdiction. So our legislation, in line with the EU legislation, provides that when we store data in a third country or in a different jurisdiction, it is the responsibility of the company storing that data to, number one, communicate it to the data subject. So as a data subject, Dwayne, you are entitled to know whether the company you engage with, let's use for as an easy example a financial institution, are they storing data, your personal information, in another jurisdiction? The legislation then says, if I store personal information in a jurisdiction outside of the boundaries or borders of South Africa, I need to ensure as a company that that country where the data is stored will provide similar, equal protection to personal information in terms of their legislative system than that which the South African system provides for. So currently, otherwise, if that's not the case, you have to contract in to ensure that the company you engage with will abide by the data privacy legislation. So where we are standing currently in South Africa, if European companies store data in South Africa, we, as our legislation has not been fully enacted, data storage centers in South Africa will have to contract in to those European companies to clearly state that they will protect the information and they undertake to then comply with the data privacy principles, specifically security of information. And that is then driven by agreements and contracts, data importer, data exporter agreements that you put in place. And in some instances, those data importer, data exporter agreements can become fairly involved and complicated, but that then becomes the criteria that you have to comply with. You know, Kieran and I spoke when we started this just before we went on air, and we discussed the concept that the United States does not provide in their constitution for the right to privacy. However, in order to enable business to flow easily between the EU, Switzerland, the United States, we've gone through various reiterations of legislation and agreements, the e-privacy shield, the safe harbor regime that they've implemented, all of that to actually tie in the United States into the privacy regime or companies in the US and standard contractual clauses to make it far more easier and greater for a smoother process to engage the engagements between companies.
All right, the difference between broad and tiered consent. Can you just explain what that is?
You know, broad consent is this concept of where there's no clear identifiable outcome for the data subject to clearly identify what they will be consenting to. If we consider, and a lot of policies are drafted in this way and manner, where you would clearly stipulate, and I personally like to make use of a table in terms of that, what I will do with, or the company will be processing the information for what purposes, and how do we link it? Do we require consent for it, or is it based on a contract, or is it based on the principle of a legitimate interest? And I think that is this whole concept of, you know, I consent to you processing my information. What does that mean to you? Doesn't actually mean anything. You don't know why I'm doing it, for what purpose I'm doing it.
If you are GDPR compliant, in other words, compliant with European legislation, would that sufficiently cover you for Papia, yes or no?
It ought to, yes.
Good. Question from Terence. Could the presenter please give me the steps to comply with the Act for a security estate that uses driver's license and fingerprint information to allow access to the estate? Should the security destroy the information after a period? What can estates fall short of the legislation?
Estates can indeed fall short in terms of how long they keep it and what they do with that information once they've got it. Do they add it to a database, the mobile number to send them unsolicited emails to? They have to destroy it, yes. They need to be clear for what purpose they've got it, and all of this has to be informed by a policy. So think about why you need it and what you do with it.
This one is from Dominique. I think we answered that question. Is the European legislation equal to Papia compliance?
Very similar. We borrowed and we considered in detail the European legislation when we drafted and prepared our legislation.
Right. Now, in respect of consent when registering for this webinar, this is Karus asking this, when registering for this webinar, it was required to tick boxes to give consent for certain processing. If these boxes weren't ticked, the registration for the webinar was not finalized. How would this information be treated after the Act's effective date? Good question.
So the reality is you tick the boxes for various, I would assume, direct marketing from MoneyWeb going forward, informing you as to the upcoming webinars. If you didn't tick it, in future, MoneyWeb would not be able to then contact you to advertise their upcoming webinars to their sessions, and you will have to find out through other means whether there are webinars you are interested in and whether you want to sign up for it. So I think that from a MoneyWeb point of view, a short answer.
Right. Now, this is from Oluwafemi. He's asking, does Popia have clear guidelines for biomedical researchers which will help them be compliant?
Well, there are indeed regulations, and biomedical information is covered in terms of the Popia legislation. And if you only consider the conditions for processing, that form a starting point to understand the obligations in terms of Popia.
Right. Another good question here. What does the Act say about how many times a company is allowed to SMS or email a customer in a short period of time? Is there any prescription?
That is not prescribed, but what is prescribed? If I ask you, Kieran, can I approach you for direct marketing when you sign up with me? And you say no, you're a customer of mine. The reality is I can't keep on asking you. I've got one opportunity to ask you whether you want to receive it, and that's going to change
forward. That's going to make life difficult for some companies, right? From a marketing perspective, can a company use a customer's information for all marketing purposes or only for a specific product or service? I think you just answered that question. It's only for one opportunity you get.
Once I consented as a data subject to a company sending direct marketing to me, the company can market their suite of products to me.
But ongoing?
Ongoing. Right. No. But I can object at any time and say, I don't want to receive that anymore.
Right. I see a lot of companies already fairly Indeed. Compliant in this. You know, do you consent, and you can opt out at any
Indeed.
Time if you want. Right. Does government have the resources to enforce compliance? I submit it's going to be as poorly enforced as the CPA. And this is from Sean. What are your thoughts on that one?
Well, Sean, I think we've had a very strong team under the leadership of Advocate Klakula and Professor Tana Pistorius putting up the structures and the processes and procedures for the regulator. And if you consider and listen to their submissions and their presentations at various forums, I think they're very much focused on the importance and the robust application of this legislation. Indeed, a problem is resources and how they will be able to enforce the legislation. But I would suggest a very easy tool for them is the enforcement notices that they can issue and actually push down the responsibility on companies to demonstrate their compliance with the legislation.
Is there any difference or gaps between European and Popia, or are they equivalent?
They're not 100% equivalent. There are differences. The important thing is we can learn from the rich case jurisprudence and the rich history of case law in terms of the application of data privacy legislation going forward.
I think the one thing we didn't cover was the penalties. Now, so who's going to be responsible for picking up the breaches of this act, and what are the penalties, if you can very quickly
explain
that?
So penalties can be significant, and I think it's besides the 10 million rand, or I can go to jail for contravention of the legislation, depending on the sections.
What did you say? 10 million rand?
10 million rand per contravention. It also brings into play the concept of civil claims, and that, in my view, is the bigger concern. A civil claim where we've entered in South Africa, nowadays we hear more and more about class actions and class actions being pursued. That is the bigger concern for companies. But will it be an easy road to travel? No, it will, but there are indeed significant fines. And in our economy, I don't think we can afford fines by a regulator for not complying with a piece of legislation that's actually not that difficult to comply with.
Okay, there is one final question. Do companies have to go back and revisit all these thousands of contracts they have with suppliers and various partners and make sure that they're POPI compliant?
But once the POPI legislation is fully enacted, companies have got a year to become fully compliant. And yes, indeed, you'll have to review what you've got in your stable to ensure that that complies with the POPIA legislation.
That was Armor Berger-Smith, and she's head of data privacy at Worksman's Attorneys. Armor, thank you very much for coming in and explaining the POPIA Act.
Thank you very much.